We'll get to that in a second, but we obviously want to start with Councillor Patrick. I've seen your comments already about that. But what I think is really unusual about this, GT, is we're hearing from everybody across the board on both sides, and this plays to what you say about local politics. And I don't care if you're Republican, a Democrat, an independent, or if you're green, everybody liked David Patrick. Why is that?
Well, and I think you saw that on Friday at City Hall as the news spread. It didn't matter if it was people, you know, in the mayor's office or department heads who worked at the city for decades or really young, brand new staffers. Everybody was just devastated by it. And I think that's because everybody recognized that David Patrick was in it for the right reasons. This is not a guy like me, for example, who grew up wanting to be in city government. He really came to it by tragedy when his brother died in office and David decided to pick up that mantle and serve. And he treated everybody the same with kindness and respect. And it didn't matter, again, if you were somebody who was way up the org chart at the city or if you were a brand new staffer. He never forgot your birthday. He never forgot the holidays. You could always count on a card and a Christmas ornament from David around the holidays. He was just a guy with a heart of gold. And the public policy and all that, I think, was not the reason he got in it. He got in it because he cared about people. And you could tell that in everything that he did. He wasn't there to try and push some agenda or whatever. He was just there to do the best he could for people. And I think people responded to that and people loved him because of it.
Having said that, he must have been a pretty good problem solver, because everything I'm hearing is many times he'd be the quiet voice in the corner that was, if you will, the voice of reason that came up with the solution.
Well, and I think all of us who served with him have seen that and been in that instance where we'd be at the council in a committee meeting, usually is where it would come up, and we'd be debating some seemingly intractable problem, and you'd have half the people at the table arguing one side of it and half the people at the table arguing the other, and we'd go back and forth and back and forth, and finally David would raise his hand and say, you know, why don't we just do this? And it would be this common sense, practical solution to the problem that just shut everybody else at the table up. Everybody else at the table, I think, was left, I think it's my friend Councillor Lakin said on Friday, thinking, God, I wish I had been the one that thought of that. And that's, we were so lucky. That's how David's mind worked. He was a practical problem solver. And when everybody else got hung up on these arguments, David, time and again, would be able to see right through the problem and identify a practical solution to it that allowed all of us to come together behind that solution and move forward.
You know, I think that's one of the reasons people like him, a guy who was a mechanic, should be at times in these offices. That's what they do. They think through problems one piece at a time, one thought process at a time, one thing at a time, not worried about anything other than the outcome at the end. And it makes sense that a guy who did that for a living would be able to do that, doesn't it?
It does. And that's one of the things that I loved about the city council. The reason I loved serving on it and I loved still working with my colleagues on it is that it brings people from all these different life experiences in Tulsa and puts us all together at one table. And we all have basically one thing in common, which is that we all love Tulsa and we want to do our best by the city. And we bring all those different experiences, all those different backgrounds to that discussion. And that's, I just love that. And the fact that time and again, those problems get solved by that group of diverse Tulsans working together. But I also want to say, I mean, a lot of folks have focused on David being a mechanic, and that definitely was, his day job. But I think it's classic David Patrick. Most people would never know. David was one of the more successful businessmen ever served on the city council. David didn't just have his repair shop. David had investment properties all over the city. He had investment land out in Colorado that he would go out every summer to manage. He had oil and gas properties all over this part of the country. But he never wore that. He never showed that off, that success that he had in business. He was just the approachable, humble guy from Dawson that he was growing up and that he was his whole life. And again, that's, I think, another reason we all loved him so much.
I know this service is on Thursday. Are you speaking? Do you know of any other plans?
Yes, his family has asked me to speak at that, and I'm honored to do it.
That's outstanding. I want to get to a couple of other things. Interesting article in the Tulsa World, you and Mike Strain, two people I respect a great deal, both of you, having a conversation about media and your take on what we hear nationally right now, which is everything is fake and everything is a side and those kinds of things. First of all, were you happy to have that discussion? And tell me, when you found out you were having it, how you thought that would go. It's an interesting thing to delve into.
You know, Mike was really smart about it because I didn't know we were going to have the conversation. He caught me off guard. And so I was meeting with the editorial board about the new Tulsans initiative, which we're launching later this week. And Mike, of course, as the managing editor, was in that discussion. Then he said, "Hey, can I pick your brain about a couple of things on a story I'm working on?" And said, "Sure." And so he asked the questions, which were in the article, and I just answered them candidly and honestly. And I didn't really even think about it until I read the article on Sunday about it in context to what you hear so much at the national level, this attempt to discount the legitimacy of journalism and media reporting. And it's created this kind of age where your consumer of news has absolutely no idea what is real and what they can trust. And that, I think, erodes the democratic process for us. And I don't pretend to know if that is really happening on a national level. I occasionally get interviewed by national publications as mayor of Tulsa, but I interact with the local media every single day. And my point to Mike was, at least at the local level, and something I learned early on, and it's been consistent in the decade that I've been at City Hall, local media wants to get the story right. Almost always they do. It doesn't mean that it's always the story that those of us who are working very hard in the public realm to do the best that we can to serve the citizens want to be out there, because when you're working so hard for a city you love, just as you would if you were doing something for your family, and the example I use is, Christmas morning 2 years ago, had our whole family over, and I was making breakfast, and the bacon was fantastic, and the pastries were great, but I burned the scrambled eggs. And to this day, that's all anyone in my family remembers. I still get teased about it. And when you're doing something for people you care about, which is, we were just talking a moment ago, I think everybody in elected office in Tulsa that I know wants to do the best they can for people that they care about here in Tulsa. You want people to focus on the positive. That's just human nature. You don't want people to focus on the negative. But that doesn't mean that the negative doesn't exist or is fake or isn't real. It's just that you wish people would focus on the good things you do instead of the bad ones.
Yeah, as you said, obviously both sides always have to be addressed, and that becomes the hard part, because either way, as a media member, you're delivering half a story that somebody doesn't want to hear, but you still have to do that. Now, you though seem fairly confident that most of us in the local media want things to be what the correct way, or at least what we think to be true.
That's absolutely been my experience, and I came into public office in Tulsa expecting the opposite. I had always heard the urban legends about reporters tricking you into saying something with one question and then misrepresenting it in their story. And So at my first interview I ever did as a city councilor, I was just terrified. I was trying to make every question or every answer to every question so vague that it couldn't possibly be misrepresented, when the reality is I can count on one hand in 10 years the number of stories where I felt like a reporter intentionally misrepresented an answer I gave to make their story more salacious or exciting. The reality is almost everyone that I've worked with in the local media wants to get the story right. And if there's a factual error, when I call them out on it, they're always very apologetic and wanting to fix it, again, with one or two exceptions. So I learned early on a rule that I've tried to stick to in the time that I've been at City Hall, which is, you know, if somebody writes a story that has a factual error in it, I'll call them up to point it out. But if they write a story that focuses on something, you know, bad about the city, and I wish they would spend their time focusing on positive things about the city, I'm not going to whine to them about it because there's, you know, there's nothing to be gained from that. And they have their job. You all have your job to report the local news. And I have my job to do the best I can as a policymaker and now as a mayor for the citizens. So I try not to get into, which is the easiest trap to fall into, and as an elected official will make your life miserable if you do fall into it, which is questioning the motives of the media or your fellow elected officials. I learned a lesson from Senator Nichols years ago when I worked for him in D.C., which was, you know, if you're going to debate with someone, debate with them all day about the substance of what they're saying, their position, the reasoning that they're using in their arguments, but don't question their motives. Because when you question motives, one, you don't know if you really have, only person who knows their motives are that the person you're arguing with. And when you question their motives, it makes it personal. And then it makes it harder to move on and work together on other things down the road. And you're never going to win a debate questioning somebody's motives anyway. So stay out of that. Disagree without being disagreeable. And I've tried to do that as a city councilor, now as the mayor.
So what year was your first elected to the council?
2008. Yeah, April 8th, 2008 was my first day at City Hall.
And there's a picture of me interviewing you in 2010. From the beer summit, and you look like you're about 9, and I look the same age I am. Honest to God.
Right, yeah.
I popped up the other day on my Facebook page, and I thought, how in the world does he stay young and I get old? Oh, wait, who knows?
Well, dude, I have aged about 10 years in the last year and a half at this job.
That I can imagine you have. Now, let's move on to one other thing that I was told to ask this, and I didn't see this, but I'm told that when you were at the gathering place on stage, you were wearing what looked like a parachute.
Yes.
All right, explain that.
Yeah. Well, the team at the gathering place thought it would be funny to have people parachute in, including a G.T. Bynum stunt double. And then to have me walk out on stage and do my speech wearing a skydiver outfit, and you know, that it would be a good joke to be able to laugh at later. And so, being a good sport, I went along with it. But unfortunately, the cloud ceiling was too low for the skydivers. But I was already, by the time they realized this, I was already in my outfit, and that's not an outfit that you just slip on and off with ease. And so they said, well, just go walk up on stage with the skydiver outfit, and we'll tell everyone you parachuted over right over that hill. And so that's what I did. It was a joke that did not go off. But the great thing about it is I've had so many people ask me, so do you really parachute into the gathering place, which I find so flattering that anyone thinks that I would have the guts to jump out of a plane and parachute into the gathering place. You will never see that happen, ever.
Come on now. It's one of my goals. I mean, not a lot of stuff scares me. Obviously, it's why I'm a diver and an instructor. I definitely want to jump out of an airplane one day. I'll do it with you.
I'll be there from the ground to shake your hand when you land.
And even if it's a plop.
Right. Yeah.
All right. So I did see from a post that you were out at the Gathering Place on Saturday, just you and the family in a t-shirt. Tell me how that went, what it was like a week later.
Oh, it was awesome. My wife was invited to do one of the readings at the Reading Tree. They're getting all these really neat people to come out and read to kids at the Reading Tree out there. Had one of the Harlem Globetrotters out there last week. And Susan was out there. And so the kids and my in-laws and I went out there to cheer her on. And then my in-laws are from out of town and hadn't seen Gathering Place, and so we walked around and showed it off to them, and boy, it was hot on Saturday. We were out there from about 11 until 2, so like the hottest part of the day, but it was just so awesome. I mean, you cannot, I just can't continue to talk about how you see kids from all these different backgrounds out there playing together, having a wonderful time, their parents out there, spending time with their kids, which is awesome. And the great thing about the way that park is designed is you can have, and we could tell by the traffic pulling up, that there were probably tens of thousands of people at that park. But the way it is designed is that there are interesting things in the park spread out all over the place, and from each feature you really can't see the other features, so you never feel like you're crowded in this park and that it's this overwhelming crowd of people. It feels like it's a decently populated space that you can just enjoy walking through. So it was awesome to be out there with our kids and to get to show it to people who hadn't seen it before. You know, as my father-in-law said, his greatest regret walking through there was that he was not a kid again. He would have loved for Tulsa to have this when he was under 10. To get to go and play on some of that equipment out there.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine we all would.